Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Hello, world, and welcome back to another episode of Thanks for Coming In. I'm your host, Jillian Clare. Thank you, everyone who is tuning in for the first time. This is the show where I talk to actors about their careers and, more importantly, the auditions along the way. Some that were very important that got away, that they didn't book. Some were embarrassing. Some were sad. And some even had a happy ending. You just never know what they're going to bring to the table. Today on the show, we have Connie Giordano. She is currently on Mare of Easttown, which is on HBO with the incomparable Kate Winslet. And I don't know if y'all have been watching it, but it is so good. And I am loving it. I want to know what happens. I can't wait for this Sunday to see the next episode. If you haven't been watching, it's really, really good. So check that out on HBO. Connie's fantastic in it. And it was so great to talk to her and know all of the behind the scenes stuff. So here's my conversation with Connie Giordano. Welcome to the show, Connie.
Hey, Jillian. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fabulous on episode 2 already.
I know. Well, actually, I think this interview is going to air not this Thursday, so next Thursday.
Okay.
So it'll be episode 3, but I just watched episode 2 this morning and you got to have some fun in that one.
There's a lot going on, isn't there?
So for the listeners, Connie is in the new HBO series, Mare of Easttown, with the just fantastic Kate Winslet. And I am so, so jealous because she is just my hero. I've loved her since I was a kid. And you're just so great in it.
Oh, thank you.
How did Mare of Easttown come about?
Well, you know, it's funny. I listened to a show with the writer Brad Inglesby about a month or so ago, and I didn't even have any idea of how many years this was in the works. I mean, they always say that, right? These things, of course, don't happen overnight. But this thing was in the works for years. Apparently, the lead was originally supposed to be a male detective. So, I mean, it's changed quite a bit. But it's been in the works as in production for over 2 years. We started in 2019.
Holy crud.
Yeah. But with COVID, we shut down for about 6 months, but I was so thrilled that it didn't get scrapped, you know, because a lot of shows did. Yeah. So I feel so blessed that that they wanted to come back because, you know, most of the production team, including Kate, they're all on the West Coast or, you know, for her, she's in England, I believe, most of the time. So, you know, it was a measure to even have to come back and start all this up again. But they did. Thank goodness.
Yeah. And I mean, it's crazy in general to have to take a production out of where the production company is. And if if you're listening to the show and you're not in this industry, it takes a lot. The amount of money that production spends on per diem, flights, hotels, all the things that go into it, then add COVID with quarantining testing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was it like to get back on set during the pandemic?
Jillian, I think I had 4 or 5 COVID tests within 3 days of going back to the set. Wow. So, and had to quarantine for 2 days. And I was only on for one more day, filming for one more day, because I was fortunate. I did most of my filming before pre-pandemic. And so I know a lot of other people, you know, it was just like a 3-day process just for one day on the set. It was nuts. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's good. It's good to know that they're taking care of their people, that everyone's looking out for each other. I know that it was definitely strange to see like a shutdown with our industry, because that doesn't happen.
Ever. I know. I mean, honestly, I think some things are never going to go back to the way they were in terms of things like auditioning. But, you know, that could be a wonderful thing. It could be a real positive to come out of all of this, because like I, for myself, I'm based in Philadelphia. I used to be in New York, but now when I have auditions, I don't have to get in the car for 4 hours.
That is
a
plus.
I go into my living room.
That's a big plus.
That is a big plus. Yes.
That's wild. So you said you used to live in New York. When did you live in New York?
I was there for the whole of the 90s. I actually left right before 9/11. So, you know, I really saw a big transformation in New York City in the time I was there, because of the Giuliani administration that had come in for such a long time. The city was just so different over the 90s. And, you know, it's so close for me, Jillian. It's a little under 2 hours. So I go back so much. Sometimes I feel like I never left.
Now, why did you move to New York from Philadelphia? Are you from Philadelphia?
I did. Yes, I am. I'm originally from this area. I grew up in Valley Forge.
Oh, cool.
People always go, Valley Forge. How do I know that? Valley Forge, I'm like, Washington, Revolutionary War. I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
The whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I grew up in this area and then moved up there after college and did a lot of, I call it trench warfare theater.
So did you always know that you wanted to be an actor? Was it something that you grew up saying, this is my calling?
Just like you, Jillian. Yeah, I started at a very young age. I mean, I remember my very first play was at a dinner theater. My parents took me to see a production of The Sound of Music, and I just fell in love. And so did musicals for years as a kid and through up to college, really. And just never stopped, you know, and it's a different ride for everybody. My ride definitely took some detours, but you know, praise God, I've had this wonderful opportunity now.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what I love about this industry is that, and it's also the most frustrating part of it, right? Because you spend so many years working towards something and you're like, where's my shot? Where's my chance to shine? But then when you do get it, it's like, oh, right, this is fantastic. I love this.
It's surreal. I have to admit, it's a little surreal.
I can't even imagine like being on a set with someone like Kate Winslet. Like, that just seems so out of this realm.
She was so professional. I mean, I liked her from the moment I met her. I mean, I'll admit, I had our first day, we just had like a rehearsal and a table read to talk about the entire script and all that. And I did have about a 30-second moment of, oh my God, I'm sitting next to Rose.
That's what I would do.
I did. You can't help it. But then, you know, you get down to the work and you just, you know, go. And it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. It really was. She was just such a pro that, you know, you kind of forget who the actress is and you think about who you're working with, you know, who you're playing against. And that's all that really matters, right?
It's true. But let's go back. So you went to college. Did you go to college for acting or did you study something else?
Well, it's funny. My older sister was a struggling artist at the time. She's a fine artist. She's a painter, wonderful talent. And so my father, by the time it was my turn for college, he had seen her struggling, and he said, you're not being a drama major. No way. So I was a communications major, in undergrad. And I took all the acting classes anyway. then when I went to New York a few years after being there, I decided I wanted the training that I feel like I never completely finished with my undergrad. So I went back for grad school for a full-time theater degree in acting.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I think it gives you confidence, you know, of course, and any education will give you confidence. Between that and doing the theater for so many years, it's a joy to not be intimidated by a role. I look at it like, oh, I can't wait. What's next? You know, I feel like the sky's the limit.
I love that. So you go to grad school, and then are you doing theater outside of grad school right when you get there, or are you focusing fully on like the theater that happens inside grad school? Because I know that is extensive in itself.
It is. We put on productions actually in between in the summers. And actually the school I went to, City University of New York in Brooklyn, we were required to perform for two of the large theaters that were on the campus, but they were community-based theaters. So the residents of Brooklyn were members that had memberships to the theater. So, you know, it never felt like it was school, that's for sure. And the productions were magnificent. It was such a treat. I mean, it was just such a, you know, it was just such, I feel like I was in the heart of the arts when, you know, where I was, because, you know, the Brooklyn Academy of Music was down the street, and it was just everywhere. It never even felt like school.
Right. That's so nice. Were you always focused then on theater, or did you want to do film? Because I know that there are some actors who are very like, I want to do this side of acting.
You know, I think, well, for me, I started on stage, and I do feel like it's where I got my training. I think that for most actors, you need to start on stage. I just think it's the first step in any kind of performance. I think it's very rare to meet an actor that didn't start on stage. I know it happens, but almost every performer I know, no matter what venue they are working in now, they all started on stage. It's just, I guess, the natural place. You know, it starts in school, you know, or you go to a community theater. I mean, that's where it starts. And so always for me. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to do all of it, of course. Like everybody starts out on stage and then they go, yeah, well, I really want to do TVs and movies now too. And I want to get paid. So
it's not the truth.
Naturally evolves that way.
It's true. Yeah, I have met people who are actors who have never been on stage, and to me that is just such a strange thing, because I feel like, I mean, theater really is the heart of where acting started. It's why we all have careers now, is because of theater. And I feel like theater is such a good training ground, giving you that you only have one shot. You know, you're not going to be able to sit there and correct yourself 10 times. You have to get it right. You need to know it.
Right. And if you can do it there, then you can do it. They're different animals to me. I've learned that very quickly. Film and television acting is more like moment to moment. Whereas with a play, it's like you start and you don't stop, and you go through an entire story in one shot. And I know everybody says that, but you know, until you do them both, then you realize because you go, how am I going to do this with somebody with a big camera in front of my face and 50 million people around? You know, how do you get, because for me, the state, you know, the dynamic, the energy between actors on stage is, it just becomes overwhelming. Like, you know, you you get into the groove, and you sometimes you don't even know where you are, but it's not like that in film. You're constantly stopping and being interrupted. So you go, how am I supposed to act with that? But you have to rely on those moment to moment. That's what you have. But they can be really rich, you know, as hopefully our show is showing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's true. I remember when I was super young, I did a production of Meet Me in St. Louis, and I played Tootie. And I remember even at that age, whenever the woman who was playing my older sister would start singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, no matter what, I would always start sobbing, because it is, you've done this whole arc and you're at the tippy top of it right then. And then you're just like, you're so in it. And it is something that is so, so inspiring as an actor to be able to share that connection with your fellow castmates night after night after night. and know that everyone is there for each other.
Yeah, and it feels so real, doesn't it? You don't, mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like you're in a play. The last play I did was actually, the subject matter was very dark. It was actually about the Sandy Hook massacre.
Oh, wow.
In Connecticut. And we were in tears every night, but it was real. It wasn't, you didn't force yourself to go there, but the script just naturally and the story just naturally took you there. And there's mm-hmm. nothing like that. And you don't really get that on film, but like I said, you do get it. You get a different rush.
Yeah.
You have those moments between you and the other actor and they might be instant. And sometimes you miss them and then you look back and you watch back and go, oh, wow, that actually was pretty good.
I didn't know they did that. Like interesting.
Yeah. I put it all on the other person.
I love that. It's true. It's, when you're acting and it's something that's said 1,000 times, it's acting is reacting. And a lot of times on stage, you don't see that as much, but that's why we have film and television, to see that more clearly.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
So if you had to pick, what of the three genres would you choose if you had to? You're trapped on a desert island.
And I have to choose between theater, film, and television?
Yeah. I
think I'd choose film. Even though I grew up doing theater, it really was my home. Watching movies still. I mean, I watch probably 5 new films a week that I haven't seen before just because I love movies so much. I love that I get pulled into a story for a certain amount of time and I get to watch that. And they live forever.
Yep. That's true. That's very true.
What about you? What would you choose?
Well, if I were on a desert island, I always think I would grab two books, and one of them would be the complete works of Shakespeare. I said, because at least I'd always have new material. I'd always have something to look at. And those stories are so timeless that you could, even on a desert island, you could put them in a bunch of different settings. But you know what I mean, right? It's just that complete anthology. There's so much there. I don't think you'd even need anything else when it comes to theater.
Yeah. I think I got that book as a gift for like my 11th birthday or something from my acting teacher at the time. And she was like, read it all. And I was like, I do what now? I'll try.
I'd be sitting there acting it out by myself. I wouldn't even need another person, right?
Yeah.
Because the words are so good.
It's, yeah, I mean, different beast right there. But so you've done a lot of film, though, too. You've done a lot of independent films. Tell me a little bit about some of those films and what that experience is like, because independent filmmaking is so incredible, but also stressful and fun. And I just want to know what your experience has been like.
Sure. And more, thank goodness. It's I'm so happy that people are taking it upon themselves to produce their own work more today. You know, you can do it more today than ever before. And it's exciting. I have to say one of my most, definitely most, the funnest experience I had was, a horror movie I did. Gosh, it's hard to believe it was 10 years ago now. But I know what I look like dead. So that was fun. My only beef is I look back on it and I go, I probably would have taken me a little longer to die than that. But a lot of fun. It was actually in the horror genre, it was an all-star cast. The film was called Mr. Hush. The lead, the male romantic lead was actually from Halloween 5.
Oh, wow.
It was played Michael Myers. Yes, we had Jason from Friday the 13th as a policeman in the show. So it was, and it was my first experience with all that. And, you know, I ended up, you have to promote it, right? So we went to some of the horror movie conventions that they have around the country. And that's just a whole nother world, that the right? horror com and all that. And it was so much fun, though. And I made some wonderful relationships, wonderful friendships that are still, you know, 10 years later, I still keep in touch with people. And that is such a joy to me. And that was just so much fun. We were in the Poconos and up in Milford, PA is where we filmed. So we were in the spring. It was snowing one day and then it was 85 the next day. It was crazy weather. It was like a bunch of kids in camp, you know, running around with a movie camera and a big knife.
It's true. I love location films because of that. It feels like you're at camp with a bunch of friends who are artists and you get to just like have fun and goof off. It's just true. The best.
Yeah, it's so much fun. You do feel like a kid again. And, you know, I was there long enough to love everyone, get along with everybody. And then I left because my part was finished. And so I didn't have any fights with anybody.
Got out before the drama happened.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I do want to talk, before we get into your audition story, I do want to talk a little bit about you living in Philadelphia and still being a successful actor and acting in these huge things, because I think it's important for especially young actors to realize that Los Angeles and New York are not the only places you have to live to be an actor. There are so many different places.
It's true. The film industry has boomed in Philadelphia in the last 10 plus years. In fact, Mayor of Easttown, half of it was filmed on location at the Aston Sun Studios in Aston, PA. It's one of our film production houses. And since that one came around, it's just really opened up the floodgates. And now with COVID, people are considering filming outside of New York and especially L.A., so you know, the opportunities seem really endless now and we're thrilled. You don't need to live there. I mean, I told you, I go back there quite a bit, you know, and pre-COVID I was auditioning, you know, every other day back and forth. I mean, I could do that ride in my sleep. So well, you know, you don't need to be in those big cities anymore. And I think it, you know, it's encouraging for, especially for young actors, because it's almost, I think it's almost to your benefit to seek out opportunities where there isn't 1,000 people all in the same place, right? Mm-hmm. Or 1,000,000 people, you know, go through a smaller door, a smaller door in a smaller city. And maybe there's less people going through that door.
Yeah. And it's just, it's also the fact that it's like the housing wages in Los Angeles and New York are so incredibly high that for, you know, a struggling young artist, it could seem like an impossible hurdle to be able to actually move out here and, you know, audition and do the thing and afford it and not just live on a friend's couch. Which is why I love that all these smaller areas are now starting to boom, because I feel like it's going to give artists a lot more opportunity to live their life how they want to without sacrificing that to be a part of what they want to be a part of. You know what I'm saying? I feel like as artists, it's so hard to you know, have the life that you want to live, but also do what you want to do and not have any sacrifices in between.
Right. Absolutely. And I hope it encourages young actors. You know, it's true. I mean, goodness, sometimes with the traffic, I can get to New York quicker than if I lived out in Long Island or parts of North Jersey to get into Manhattan, you know? So it's true. I've coached and taught, you know, young actors, and I say to them, do you want to live in New York or do you want to work? I said, mm-hmm. if I were you, I would live at home in Philadelphia and do as much theater as you can and audition everywhere you can. And then when you've, you know, made a couple steps towards your career, you know, don't have rent be your biggest albatross to the career you want, you know, and that's what happens when you live in New York or LA. It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
It's encouraging, you know?
It is. I think we're living in such an interesting time for our industry because it's just like you have those studios in Philadelphia now. You have Tyler Perry Studios in Atlanta. You have all these things popping up now where it just feels so much more accessible to be with your family too, because so many artists leave their family and the people that they love behind to go fight for a dream.
Right. And you don't have to give it up. It's true. It's very encouraging. I think it will keep young actors around longer, right?
Yeah.
There'll be some, hopefully, longevity in their pursuit because they could see that they don't have to be in just those two places. I mean, pilot season barely exists anymore because of this mass migration around the country.
Yeah. There's no real reason for pilot season anymore, right? Because it's like there's the networks, the regular networks that are still doing typical pilot season, but the shows on HBO, Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, they're not following anyone's schedule but their own.
Right. Absolutely. When I was in New York, I never wanted to be, I knew so many performers who would go out to California every year, you know, in early February, and they'd come back defeated 6 months later from pilot season. And yeah, that has really evolved, and I'm thrilled for everyone for that. With all these new networks and all this cable access and all that, it's opened up so many doors that we didn't have before. You know, some people say, "Well, it's more competitive." Like, yes, but there's more opportunity too. So that's a great thing. Yeah,
that's true. So on this show, we like to share audition stories, either things that have gone awry, or happy things, or sad things, or things that you almost got that you really wanted. Do you have an audition story you would like to share with the audience?
Sure. I love that you called it the one that got away, because I have literally called that about my little, it's a little story, very little story. For years I have called it that. I'm like, the one that got away. So when I saw that in the email, I was so thrilled. I'm like, oh gosh, we really all do think alike. it was back in the, I guess it was in the mid 90s, and I was performing at the 13th Street Theater on the west side of Manhattan, in the West Village. It's an institution. So many actors have been in and out of that theater. Mm. It's a repertoire. It's a wonderful theater. I was doing a musical version of Robin Hood.
Wow.
The classic story. Yes. And it kept getting extended. We had wonderful support, a lot of PR. The director was actually, he was, Jim Henson's nephew, and the writer was a prodigy of Stephen Sondheim. The music was fantastic. I had, I was actually playing the part of Friar Tuck, but they made it into a woman character.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a gospel singer kind of persona, and kept getting extended. I quit my job. You know, it was like everybody was so excited. And after months and months, the show closed. At the same time in the West Village, in the East Village, there was another show coming up at the same time, another musical. You might remember it, called Rent, the Broadway show.
Yeah.
So, yes. And so Rent took off and Robin Hood tanked. But I ended up auditioning for Rent and being called back for Maureen. But I did not get it. Yeah. And I know it's the role that Idina Menzel made famous. And she was like a little hero of mine. She actually worked at a hotel that I worked at the same time she was singing, I was cocktail waitressing. That tells you everything. Anyway, so I did. Yeah. So I was so dejected because I had gotten called back in New York and then I did not get a return call back. So I ended up following it to audition. Every audition in Philadelphia, I auditioned in D.C. I remember getting on a bus at like 3 a.m. in the middle of the night to go down to be like first in line in D.C. because it was another open call. It wasn't a callback. Mm. You know, it was just an open call. But I was so determined that I went. And I just remember not getting past the first round that time. And I called my boyfriend at the time, crying hysterically when we had payphones.
Oh, my gosh.
I was so bummed. Yeah, because I had put so much energy into doing it all. And that's when I decided to go back to grad school because I thought if I can – my heart was so broken, and I thought if I still want to do this after this rejection, I said I need to go full throttle. I'm like, I may be a teacher someday, I don't know, but I want to get my master's so that I really feel like I am a professional actress. Mm. So even though I didn't get that role, it really propelled me, and that's what happened. I ended up going back to school, and then shortly after that, I started working on doing a lot of commercial work. And, you know, of course, I've never looked back. And, of course, I'm still on my road. I'm still pursuing like everybody else. I think it's a lifetime pursuit. But it was that rejection of that show that is still my number one, near and dearest to my heart, probably show of all time. And that role especially, that rejection kicked me into committing to it for life. I knew if I could get through that and I still wanted to pursue it, that I was in it for life. So
that's amazing. I have a Rent tattoo.
Oh, do you really? Yay! Love that.
I can totally, I know why you were so obsessed with it. I mean, that show was fantastic. Oh, yeah. And, you know, yeah. Rest in peace, Jonathan Larson. And it's just, yes. it was a revolutionary show. So I can.
What's the tattoo? I have to know. What's the tattoo?
Oh, it says no day but today.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Gosh. Oh, awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a reason why people waited around the building for, you know, days to audition and to go see the show, right? It was such a phenomenon at the time. And
but you know, so cool. Cheers to you, because not many people can turn rejection into something good, and that's something that every actor needs to learn how to do, is how to take that rejection and leverage it into something that's useful. And that's what you did. You went back to grad school and you mm-hmm. said, this is it. I'm committing. No bullshit anymore. This is it.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. I just think everybody will have a reason to say no. Right. Yeah. You never hear yes.
It's true.
And you just have to get used to it and use it as a means to push you to the next one. All right. Not no for that. No that. Oh, right. How about that one? How about that one? Right. A number. I used to date a guy who was in sales, and he used to say, "Treat it like a numbers game. Just keep going, keep going, keep going." You know, it's true. It's very true.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you for sharing that inspiring story, because I feel like everybody needs to hear that. Everybody needs to know that no just needs to push you further into the direction of what you want.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. No day but today. I love that you have that tattoo. I love that. Awesome.
I got it right when I turned 18. It was my 18th birthday to myself, birthday present.
So who did you love more? Mimi? Maureen? Who did you like?
I was always a Mimi fan growing up, but I think now I like Maureen more. Because I think just as you grow up, it's, you know, when I was a teenager, I thought Mimi was so cool because she was like, you know, had her own dancer. Life. And she was a dancer and she was dope and she almost died. And she was really like the whole catalyst of the story. And then like you start realizing how deep all the rest of the characters are, like Mark and Maureen. And I ended up liking them more as an adult than I did as a teenager.
Well, they both had great songs too. So either one, you can't lose with that one.
No, you can't. You can't. So what's next for you out in Philadelphia?
That's a good question. You know, right now I actually promote products on HSN. That's in our backyard here, QVC and HSN is their partner down in Florida. So I'm a brand representative for one of their indoor outdoor brands called Sunjo Snowjo. It's a snow plows and shovels in the winter, and then in the summer it's gardening tools and all that stuff. So I'm currently just doing that until something else comes along with the show, since we're also anxiously waiting for this thing to unfold. And now that it's underway, I'm like, okay, I'm with you. I'm like, what's next?
I'm so excited to see what happens. I feel like I know who did it, but I know that I never know who did it, because it's always going to be exactly the opposite of what I thought.
I've had like 4 people tell me who they think it is already. And I'm like, I signed a confidentiality. I'm not saying a word.
I know. And you're like, but I cannot.
I'm enjoying it.
Right. It's fun when so many people get involved with what you are in. It's dope.
I'm loving that people are captivated by this story. The writer and the director, Craig Zobel, they did it such honor. You know, when you read something, you have an idea in your head of what it's going to be like. And mm-hmm. then when I'm seeing it, because I'm just seeing it for the first time now, too. I'm so thrilled that it's what I thought it was. There's a lot of intrigue and anticipation, and it just moves really fast. And I'm thrilled for that, because that's what I was hoping when I read it. That's what grabbed me.
I can't wait to see what happens, and I can't wait to see what you do next. I hope that this show, you know, gets some eyes on you and you propel into something big, because I think you're fantastic in it.
Oh, thank you. Amen for all of us, right? I get the daily phone calls, especially from two of my two sisters, saying they think they know who it is, and I just giggle.
Where can people find you on social media?
I'm on Instagram at ConnieGiordano3, and I'm on Facebook, of course. So, and I've got the website, ConnieGiordano.com, and I put up, you know, reels and any of latest info that's interesting to anybody. So that's where you can find me anytime.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Connie. It was so, so nice to talk to you. And
Jillian, you're terrific. Thank you.
I'm so excited to see what's next for the show and for you. And please keep us updated, and you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you so much. You're terrific. Appreciate it.
Thanks again to Connie for coming on the show. Make sure to watch Mayor of Easttown on HBO every Sunday. If you like the show a lot, give us some love wherever you're listening, and make sure to hit that subscribe button. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook and all the other things. Those links are in the show notes. And hey, if you follow us on Instagram tomorrow on Friday, I don't know when you're listening to this, it might already be up, but we're posting really cool exclusive clips from these interviews, but like with people actually talking face to face. It's pretty dope. So tune in on Instagram. It's on our IGTV exclusively. I appreciate all of you in this community that we're building. And I love to hear from everyone. So send me a message. Let's talk. What's going on? And as always, thanks for coming in.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before, because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.